executive affairs. Messenger. May it please the court. My name is Les Messenger, and I work from Finnegan Henderson, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Norvell. Mr. Norvell has raised several statutory interpretations issues in this appeal. When Mr. Norvell came before the Court of Appeals and Veterans Claims, he presented a real case or controversy regarding specifically whether there were relevant medical quality assurance records that exist, as well as whether the VA had an obligation under 5103A and 5705 to assist Mr. Norvell in obtaining such records.
How can they assist if the records don't exist?
Well, that's one of the questions, Your Honor, that the Veterans Court is really not in the proper position to assess. That specifically, because that fact goes to, and it's the type of fact that goes to the merit of Mr. Norvell's claim, is the precise type of fact that should have been dealt with by the board, who's in that specific type of position.
But it's a jurisdictional fact, and if there is no dispute over the fact, it's an undisputed fact that the records don't exist, why can't the Veterans Court decide it?
Because, respectfully, Your Honor, at this point, there is a dispute whether there is something that exists.
Well, just saying there's a dispute doesn't make one. What evidence do you have to suggest that those records exist? They're within the control of the VA, and they're saying that they have affidavits that there are no such records.
This is true, but 7261C specifically provides that is not within the realm of what the Veterans Court should have gotten to, because it goes to the merits of the claim. That is something that the board is better suited for.
But back to the point, if there's no dispute on any aspect of the merit of the claim, why cannot the Veterans Court reach it? And is there a dispute? How could there be a dispute?
I believe, Your Honor, I believe there can be a dispute here, because that issue has not been properly vetted, because the veteran has not
but
had...
But more can be vetted. They've asked the secretary to come up with records. The secretary has gone to his repository and says they are not there. There is nothing.
Mr. Norvell has not had an effective opportunity to challenge those records, has not had an effective
challenge
opportunity.
Challenge the records, they don't exist. You can't challenge something that doesn't exist.
Or challenge whether they may have existed at one time.
How would that matter?
Because at this point, there may be records that still are there that may not have been sought out through these affidavits. That's an issue that is best done by the regional office, and that's her.
The regional office is going to do what? They're going to ask the secretary to check his records. It's been done. What more can be done?
And Mr. Norvell, Your Honor, respectfully, Mr. Norvell would have the opportunity to ask those involved, perhaps, with the procedure, whether certain types of records would have been made. It's the opportunity to seek that out. And 7261C does not permit, this is the exact type of thing that 7261C prevents the Veterans Court.
Well, 7261 prevents the Veterans Courts from making merit-based fact findings, but this is a question of jurisdiction. So, the records don't exist. The merits of this case are whether he's entitled to service connection and the extent of his injuries. The merits of this case, well, in this case, whether the doctor committed malpractice or something along those lines, the merits of this case don't have to do with does the document exist or not, such that we then should have compelled its production. That's jurisdiction.
But that's where the board is specifically set up to deal with
things. To deal with the merits.
How can the board do anything different than what has been done is part of my question.
The board could...
Do what?
Could be able to... Excuse me. The board should be able to hear from Mr. Norvell. Mr. Norvell should have an opportunity.
Why? He doesn't know whether there are records. He didn't write quality assurance documents. He didn't see them. They're privileged and confidential. He has no personal knowledge, nor have you alleged any, of whether such records exist. So why should they hear from him on that point?
Because I believe that's where this inquiry, because it goes to the merits of the existence of such documents, goes to the merits of the claim. It's not merely an equitable tolling issue like in the case of Barrett or in the case of some of the other cases.
But if the board hears from Mr. Norvell, what can he tell them that will remedy the problem that the secretary has no records?
In this case, Mr. Gravel only had 15 days in which to respond. I think by remaining this down to...
If he gets more time, what possibly can he say that will change the absence of records?
Well, one thing is the board could go out and more thoroughly vet whether there were non-confidential documents out there as well as confidential records.
We're looking for the quality assurance records,
quality
right?
Assurance.
That's what we're looking for.
That is true. That is true.
They aren't there. Now, what more can we do?
And I think that's one of the questions I think that the board can more fully investigate is by having some more thorough vetting of that issue.
I don't understand. What more thorough vetting could there be? We look, there are no documents. I'm just confused. What more thorough vetting do we need to have occur? The absence of something is very difficult to more thoroughly vet, it seems to me.
This is true, but Mr. Norvell didn't have an effective opportunity to come to ask or inquire about what would have happened at the Lexington Medical facility that could have created records that now at this point, because it's so late in the game, we don't know whether they would have existed because the secretary's actions were so late at the 11th hour.
But if they existed and were destroyed, how is that at all relevant? I mean, maybe there would be some, you know, very old clerk who seems to recall possibly there could have been some records and they were destroyed in the normal course of business. Why would that be relevant? Why would that have any effect on the outcome of this case?
Mr. Norvell should have that opportunity to investigate that.
Why? It doesn't affect the merits of this case. If the documents don't exist, what difference does it make if they used to exist but were destroyed 15 years ago?
That is one of the underlying and fundamental determinations that the Veterans Court seems to have made, that I believe the board and with Mr. Norvell having the opportunity to further investigate this, that the board could then properly make that determination.
Okay, why? What? I just don't understand you. What does your client gain if the documents used to exist but were destroyed 15 years ago in the course of business? How would that better enable him to establish his case?
If there are, in fact, no documents that are relevant, that is something that may be the case. But the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that the inquiry into that at the Veterans Court level
was in contrary. How do you get around our case of Barrett, counsel? Because in Barrett, I believe, at page 1041, we discuss in detail the Veterans Court's policy or practice of deciding factual issues relevant exclusively to the jurisdiction question that are not reasonably in dispute. And I don't see how you've raised any suggestion that there's a reasonable dispute of whether these documents exist or not. So why doesn't this fall squarely under Barrett as something the Veterans Court is permitted to do?
The question before Barrett, before this court in Barrett, had to do with equitable tolling issues. Equitable tolling issues, which are not the types of facts that the board would have ever have had before. That's distinguishable from this case as far as the existence and content of whatever medical record or quality assurance.
Hold on, though. The equitable tolling issue in Barrett was whether or not his mental incompetence could toll the time to respond, and his mental incompetence was exactly the merit-based issue regarding whether he should receive funds. How is that less related to the merits than in this case?
It still goes to the procedural aspects of what was being held there. The procedural aspects that were dealt with in there differ than here on the existence of quality assurance records.
Let me ask you a question about how you proceeded in the case. Did you, your best counsel, seek out to see if there were records against them or any other repository?
In the record books?
Very in this case.
I would have to look. I mean,
no, I'm just asking if you did.
Me personally?
You personally. Check. Just a question, not suggestion that you had to.
No, Your Honor, I did not.
Personally. Well, I would say, of course, not. Missing cases where FISO has done so.
Right. Mr. Norvell did request records. The VA should have a duty to go off and investigate that. The fact that there is confidentiality potentially should not obviate the VA's duty to actually go off and have a statutory duty to help develop that part of the veterans' claim. There is plenty of express statements that QA records can be non-confidential, and the existence of that purely should require that the VA go off and help and assist the VA in developing the facts under 5103A. 5705 does not
retain your rebuttal time.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Your Honors have already keyed in on the key issue in this case.
Why in the world, in the first request, in the VA request form 10-2633, and is that a quality assurance form?
It is a quality assurance form, and I do not know the answer to Your Honor's question.
Is it routine that they request it?
I do not believe so, because the regular process...
It's suspicious. I mean, if the government wants us to adopt a position that quality assurance forms ought not to be available even for an in-camera form of inspection to ascertain whether they would have meaningful information and not be privileged, why would the VA, which I assume has a standard practice it follows when requesting these forms, one of these very forms? That is really puzzling to me.
Well, Your Honor is correct. The VA manual as well as the regulations make it clear that these quality assurance records should not be requested. I do not know why in this instance. Of course, Your Honor is well aware this goes on all over the country. There's many different offices. And in fact, the procedure should have been not to request it.
They call a specific form out by number. I'm troubled.
It's an incident form, and it is probably the most common form that is used in questions where there might be an issue of medical malpractice. Why in that particular office they asked for it, I don't know. The response should have been...
Is that because there's some sense that there probably was a problem here?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. There's simply nothing in this record.
Why is everyone focusing in on it if there is no reason to believe there's a problem?
Well, there were progress notes in this case, as both parties indicate in their briefs, that indicate that at one point in time, there was a question raised by some of the treating physicians and or nurses that the post-surgery pain that Mr. Norvell had may have been related to the surgery. That's why this whole question has come up. But Dr. Connor, who reviewed these records both in 2003 and 2005 and did what the board called a longitudinal study, indicated otherwise. So there was divided evidence, disputed evidence, as to whether or not the post-surgery pain that Mr. Norvell had was related to his surgery. So that's why I presume his counsel suspected, well, if this pain is connected to the surgery, maybe there's a malpractice question. I simply don't know the answer to Judge Moore's question as to why initially it was requested, because I agree, pursuant to normal VA procedure, it should not have been requested, because had there been such a record, the answer should have been, and I presumably would have been, you can't have this record because it's a quality assurance record. It can't be produced.
But you would like a blanket rule that all quality assurance records are off limits. And what about Bethel, the District of Colorado case, that specified, when you look at your own regs, there are four descriptors for quality assurance documents, and at least the suggestion out of the District Court of Colorado was not all quality assurance documents meet one of those four regulatory definitions, and therefore not all quality assured documents satisfy the confidential and privileged nomenclature or are deserved to be treated as such. So why shouldn't there be sort of an in-camera review that would take place to ascertain whether this is a quality assurance document that is or is not properly privileged according to your own regs?
Your Honor, let me start with the nomenclature. By definition, a quality assurance record is a document that is confidential and privileged. If a document, as in the Bethel case, is not privileged or confidential, it is by definition not a quality assurance document. Therefore, the documents in Bethel were not quality assurance documents and were not confidential. They were, for lack of a better term, mistakes. Those documents, because they did not meet the criteria in the regs, should have been in the claims file because they weren't quality assurance.
I'm a little nervous that this quality assurance notion is used a lot like the confidential nomenclature we get on briefs, overused all the time. And so if that's the case, if, as in Bethel, it is not uncommon for things to be designated privilege, like in a litigation, where you pull up that privilege log and in-camera review shows that at least 20% of most things designated privilege weren't properly done so. So if that's the case, don't the veterans have a legitimate right to have someone, I mean, given the whole purpose of our veteran system to be proclaimant, isn't it really important that we make sure that if mistakes are routinely being done over privilegizing these documents, that maybe this is one of those accommodations that ought to be made to make sure?
Well, no, Your Honor. First of all, there's no reason to believe this is something that happens commonly or that it's 20% of the time it occurs. It should very rarely have ever happened. Apparently, it happened in Bethel, although I would note in Bethel it was a procedural error. There's no question in Bethel that those
documents... You seem to be testifying. Do you have record evidence that this doesn't happen as a regular clause?
I certainly do, Your Honor. I just don't want to...
And I don't see how you can make this argument.
I certainly have no...
But we've had a number of cases where the government has said, including as they said right here, that certain records of these kinds of cases do not exist. And counsel has gone to the source and found them and brought them into the court.
Your Honor, I certainly am aware of that. These are not... This is not a case where the records don't exist. We have all the records from this claims file. They're before the court, they were before the board, they were before the RO. This is very specific to quality assurance records. But these are documents that are maintained separately from the claims file. And in response to Your Honor's question, there is a process that the VA goes through for people who work specifically with quality assurance records to ensure that all the documents that are in the quality assurance record are in fact quality assurance records. In Bethel, those were supposed to be quality assurance records. What happened is procedurally, the I's were not dotted and the T's were not crossed in terms of assuring that the proper procedures were followed as set forth in the regs. That is a mistake. Your Honor is correct. I can't testify and I do not know what percentage of documents are in quality assurance records that are in fact not quality assurance records. But it's a very different question from the underlying medical records of Mr. Norvell. I would add that there's no evidence in this case, in response to Judge Rader's question, that there were ever any quality assurance records created in this case. So the substantive question that Mr. Norvell raises may be something that this court wants to consider in another case, but not in this case.
Because he's only asking for it to go back and have it be part of
Right.
Which hasn't been done yet.
Well, the Veterans Court in this case issued the order. The Veterans Court was concerned because the report did make a finding here that there was no evidence in the record of any quality assurance records. And the Veterans Court wanted to satisfy itself that the government did a search and made an affirmative representation that, in fact, there were no such records. The Veterans Court did that. The Veterans Court also stated in its order that there were it gave Mr. Norvell 15 days to respond to any problems it saw with the government search. And what Mr. Norvell responded to in those 15 days is not to say that he had any problems with the search, that there was any indication that, in fact, there were quality assurance records. All he said was he disputed the procedure, as he's doing here today, with the Veterans Court making some factual findings on its own prior to the board having the determination for that.
Yeah, but he didn't. One of the things that has made me nervous, and it isn't something that was discussed in the first few minutes of oral argument earlier, but is I'm not entirely sure, and hopefully our rebuttal opposing counsel can clarify for me, but I'm not entirely sure, but I thought I understood them to also be making an argument that the Secretary's affidavit was insufficient in the way it suggests what are and are not available. That maybe there is a factual finding about whether any quality assurance documents are available, because the way the Secretary's affidavit is worded, it is very precise, almost too precise, and necessarily could exclude the consideration of non-confidential or something else. I mean, I understood them to be raising what they thought possibly was a dispute of fact over what the Secretary is in fact saying does and does not exist.
I think they're raising, again, before this court, but did not raise it before the Veterans Court, and therefore waived that argument. They're saying that, well, maybe there was a further search that the Secretary could have done. Whenever you're in the position that we're in here trying to prove a negative, there's always something more you could do. For example, you could go through every quality assurance record in every location in the United States at every VA hospital and maybe find a record related to Mr. Norvell. So they're indicating that perhaps a more thorough search could have done. I also want to clarify.
But isn't that exactly why maybe something like this should be taking place at the board and not the Veterans Court? Well, where there are opportunities for cross-examination, opportunities exist for more thorough fact findings and investigation at the lower levels than they do at appellate levels.
Well, Your Honor, there's two responses to that question. The first one is this is something that Mr. Norvell waived by not raising it before the Veterans Court. We would, however, agree with Your Honor that had he raised it and there was a reasonable dispute, a reasonably disputed
when
fact.
When did you want him to raise this, just so I understand?
Before the Veterans Court. When the Veterans Court issued an order, the Veterans Court said, Government, you come forward with affidavits, and you state in those affidavits whether or not there are any quality assurance records relating to Mr. Norvell or to his surgery. The government then came back with affidavits, clearly indicating both in the affidavits and in its filing that there were no such records. The Veterans Court further stated in its order.
Wait, did he then have an opportunity to respond?
Exactly, Your Honor. The Veterans Court ordered that Mr. Norvell, you have 15 days to respond to the affidavits that the government produced and to state in those, in your response, what problems, if any, you have with the government's affidavits.
Was he represented by counsel?
Yeah, he was represented by the Veterans Association there, the organization that represents it. And he filed a pleading. And that pleading is attached to our brief in the appendix. And what he said in that pleading, he did respond. But all he complained about was the fact that the Veterans Court made the finding as opposed to the board. He did not complain anything about the thoroughness of the search. He's assumed that the search, he didn't say anything about the quality of the search. He simply said, we want the Veterans Court to make the finding, the board to make the finding, the Veterans Court shouldn't. He didn't complain about the breadth of the search or the thoroughness of the search.
But isn't that exactly why the board should make the finding and not the Veterans Court?
If there was a reasonable dispute, yes. Barrett says that the board, that the Veterans Court can make findings as to jurisdiction, but it should only do so. We stated this in our brief when there's not a reasonably disputed fact.
You actually made Barrett a little narrower than I think Barrett necessarily is. I mean, you suggested that you thought the Veterans Court didn't have the authority to make jurisdictional fact findings if there is any reasonable dispute over facts. And I don't think Barrett necessarily adopts that.
Your Honor, I agree totally with that. That's simply our position
right.
that we're taking in the case. Barrett could be read to allow that. We're simply saying that it's not a reasonably disputed fact that merits
granted. I looked back at all of the underlying information on Barrett, and I didn't see this issue being fully fleshed out or developed by Barrett. So Barrett certainly talks about the Veterans Court's practice of deciding these facts, but Barrett does not, nor did I see it raised in Barrett, correct me if I'm wrong, the issue of whether it's appropriate for the Veterans Court to make this decision in the first instance. So you can't expect a court to decide whether a practice is appropriate if that issue is not on appeal before it, correct?
Well, except the Barrett Court certainly stated in two different instances. The one Your Honor indicated on, Your Honor cited to, it's on page 1041 of the decision, and also in footnote double asterisk, the Barrett Court went on even further to state that the government and, in fact, the claimant are required to produce facts relevant to jurisdiction. We're simply saying that that rule, which is an exception to the normal rule regarding the merits, should only apply when there's not a reason to dispute.
Wait, no, but that's all going to the point which was decided in Barrett, which is, who has to come forward with evidence and what burden exists.
That's right.
None of that goes to whether the Veterans Court is permitted in the first instance to be deciding these fact questions.
Well, it's
not an issue that was raised in Barrett, so I don't see how we would interpret this case as a carte blanche holding that the Veterans Court is free to make fact findings in the first instance.
The Federal Circuit's, what this court stated in Barrett was that this is what the Veterans Court does, and it's a clear implication from what Barrett is saying, what the Federal Circuit is saying in this case, that they're blessing the procedure that they're using.
Where does the blessing come in? Show me which line.
I think the way they say it, we take our blessing seriously. In fact, when the Veterans Court determines that it needs additional information to decide jurisdictional issues, this is what it does. I would think that if the court was not approving of that procedure, it would have said so there.
Well, but if no one appealed it, if no one suggested that practice was inappropriate, why would the court go through and analyze it? We don't make up issues. It's not... Okay, counsel,
The other point I'd like to make with respect to Mr. Norvell's comments about non-confidential quality assurance documents, those are not documents that would be in any location other than within the quality assurance file. They are mistakes. They are documents that have been designated as quality assurance documents, but actually don't meet the criteria, as in Bethel. It's not a situation where there might be some other third location where they could be.
So you're saying the Secretary's statement that there exists no confidential quality assurance documents should also be interpreted as there exists no non-confidential quality assurance documents?
The Secretary's statement that it could locate no quality assurance documents is a statement that it could locate no quality assurance documents or quality assurance documents that are erroneously placed in that file that are actually not quality assurance documents that are not confidential.
It says there are no confidential and privileged VA medical quality assurance records. That's the statement. The statement is there's no quality assurance.
Right, but those words are redundant, is what I'm saying. The confidential and privileged quality assurance documents are the same as quality assurance documents, because if they're not confidential and privileged, they are not quality assurance documents, and they shouldn't have been in the file in the first place. That's what I'm saying. There's no distinction being made there. And I see that my time is up, and if the court has no further questions, we would ask that this court affirm the decision of the Veterans Court. Thank you.
So, counsel, in your short time, you mind starting with the issue that I was trying to throw at you a few minutes ago, which is, are you disputing whether or not the affidavits factually represent the non-existence of any records?
Talking about the affidavits you're looking at?
Yes. Are you raising a dispute?
Yes.
A factual dispute over the affidavits and whether or not they establish no reasonable belief that the records don't exist?
Your Honor, you bring up a very good point. My opposing counsel just got up here and related how quality assurance records are synonymous with confidentiality and privilege in those two. And that's the way in which those terms have been used, and as they appear in those affidavits, certainly brings up a reasonable dispute. I believe Your Honor has referenced certain regulations, as even called them, talking about the non-confidentiality of certain quality assurance records. I would point the court to 38 CFR 17501G. That particular regulation sets forth how a document can meet all the other requirements, and in fact calls it a quality assurance record, but that it is particularly non-confidential. Here there is certainly an argument, or there's a reasonable argument that perhaps that was not done.
You think the secretary has deliberately withheld some records?
Whether the secretary deliberately withheld them or not, I believe that there is still a proper inquiry that is yet to do, and that the board is really the proper place to do that with terms that fully vet that issue, whether confidential or non-confidential documents have been searched out. Opposing counsel also brought up the concept of waiver.
Counsel, wait a minute. You pointed us to G, because I think this is an important point. You're suggesting not everything that might be in a quality assurance designation is in fact confidential. But when you go through G1, 2, 3, 4, and you look at all of them, it seems to me that the things they're saying are not confidential are things that would have no reference to an individual patient. Like, look at G1, statistical information that does not implicitly or explicitly identify any individual VA patient. And nearly every one of the other exceptions is similarly worded. So it seems to me that even if such records existed, they would not by name Mr. Norvell, and therefore they would never be findable for you to consider, because the only ones that don't count as confidential are sort of more statistical compilation type things that don't reference individuals.
With respect to your argument, you are correct in that characterization, but they still may have some relevance.
But how would you be able to find which ones could possibly be referring to him?
They could be relevant to the type of procedures that were done at that facility, that type of thing. So in trying to wrap up, the point here is that the discretion that this court has should be exercised, because there's no other way in which to get at this issue and this kind of conduct regarding the duty of looking for these records.
All right, thank you.
All rise.